We are talking with Paul Stonehill, and we'll resume that conversation in a moment. I had told you we shifted some things around in the program, including what we're about to jump into here for a minute. By the way, welcome to autumn. Summer is officially over as of midnight. Webmaster Greg Bishop and I pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities for tonight's program. We call it Naps News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast website. Among the items there tonight, an article that was going to be related to our first guest, Dr. Hoffman, but we had a problem with connecting with him, and we'll try to reschedule that. It's an argument about whether reality as we know it even exists. Another big question, what are the chances that we're the only intelligent species? We have a think piece looking at that central question. Also a fun story about Viking warriors, the berserkers they were known as. Why were they so fierce? What were they drinking? There were some clues about that in this story, and we've also got a piece about a secretive space aggressor squadron that's already working here in the U.S. to take adversaries on up there in the wild blue yonder. Those stories and more in Naps News. In a moment, we continue with, Paul Stonehill getting into the mysteries of Lake Baikal, the Mariana Trench, and maybe into Tunguska. And then at the bottom of the hour, we will open up the phone lines with your calls and questions for my guest. Paul Stonehill, before the break, you started to tell me a story about 1985 KGB overhearing something strange. Please continue.
Yes. In 1985, they overheard actually reports from the Soviet scientific research vessel about gigantic unidentified USO, submersible objects, not far from Antarctica. They were gigantic, and it's like cylinders, cone-like objects, spherical structures, which were of definitely artificial origin, and 100, 200, 300 meters. And they were in the ocean water, and at incredible velocity speeds, and were illuminated by lights. And the vessel itself was hydrological research vessel. And it was well recorded, so the KGB had to take this information in. But again, this is just one of the interesting cases that took place. This is in 1985, and I found out it about a few years ago. But for many years, and it's in my in Philip Mantle's book, we have gotten hands on information about Soviets lurking in the British territories, islands, and taking photographs of unusual, like donut-shaped gigantic objects in the sky that would hover over the British island there and others. So there is a lot. Something else that I, only in Russia, they reported it, and I hope it's not tabloid. I've read in a few cases, but the Australians in the area West Australia, they also sighted strange underwater structures down below and objects that were, you know, seen one day and gone the other day. But we just don't know enough, and Australians are not talking about it.
The Mariana Trench, you've done some pretty interesting work there. Is that a place where they're seeing weird undercover, under ocean structures or craft?
About Mariana Trench, yeah. Yes. It's for those who don't know, it's the lowest place. It's Mariana's Trough, Mariana's Deep. It's an elongated depression on the Pacific Ocean floor. Look it up. It's about 400 kilometers southwest of Guam. It's the deepest one known depression on Earth's surface, the lowest point on our planet. And from 1963, for sure, we know that something is going on. We know because Batiscaf Trieste went down there. And apparently the American naval officer and the Swiss scientists, they observed something. We just don't know enough because it's all classified to an extent. But ever since, different countries were trying to reach that, and China has been very active lately in that territory too. I believe that an American movie producer was down there not long ago, and also last year, a private businessman who could afford his own submarine went down below and saw some strange things, but he's not talking too much about it. It's the Soviets and the Americans that have been very much involved And apparently the Americans suffered something on during the exploration I believe it was called the Glamour exploration of the area.
Oh, the Glomar Explorer?
I need to recall the name. I'm sorry. My head doesn't.
The Glomar Explorer?
Glomar. You're right. Sorry. A very interesting ship, by the way. And I think there was more than one. Well, the Glomar had drilling expeditions. And during one of the expeditions, they tried to lower down an underwater platform equipped with powerful searchlights, very sensitive television and video systems, microphones, six cables. It was being lowered down, and the American scientists were present. Well, what happened that initially there was no unusual information. Several hours later, they showed something very unusual, monitors, silhouettes of strange objects, 12 to 16 meters long. And at the same time, the microphones transmitted sounds coming from below, grinding sounds of metal, hollow rumble from the impact of something striking the metal. And it was through the platform. Anyway, it never went down to the bottom of the trench. Something prevented it. When it was raised to the surface, it looked like something was down to it. The powerful fixed steel structure were bent. Steel cables looked like they were sheared off. And I found out that it was interesting that the Soviets were present aboard American scientific ships in the area during the research and vice versa. It's not a well-known information. You have to dig for it, but I did. And they all helped each other. And nowadays, it seems like all of the countries are in a rush to get there. And it reminds me of the Phobos moonlet of Mars. Oh, despite all the losses, our space programs are trying to get there. Same thing here. Like I said, keep an eye on China because they're doing a lot of research there too. They know something is going on.
Well, what can you tell us about China? What are they doing there?
China is sending out deep water apparatuses down below, Heilong and others. They're doing research. They're putting down devices in the area. And in my opinion, they're more interested in the area not far from their own territory, the local trench, Manila Trench. And actually, China is planning to build an underwater city unlike anybody else yet on this planet. They say it's a robotic city, the so-called Hades project, like the Hades, the ancient hell in Greek mythology. And that's how they called it. They will be building a whole scientific city down below if they can do it in a very dangerous area because of the volcanic activity. But they want, you know, they're planning to do it, and President Xi himself is very much into this, and he blessed this research and plans. And China, is they're spending a lot of money on this.
What do you think is down there? Let me rephrase that or back up for a second. You referred to an American producer. I'm guessing that you're talking about James Cameron, the director.
Yeah.
Who had, if you look at the movies that he has produced and directed, you look at the topics that they've covered and the fact that he's so interested and has put so much of his own resources into exploring the deep of the sea, it raises some interesting questions. He'd be a good guy to talk to some point.
Well, you should, and you should, when you do, please ask him about the Russian, because he has been in touch with the Russian deep water research scientists, very knowledgeable ones, and they help him actually in his projects. So he's doing the same what the U.S. government was doing before with the Soviet government. They're exchanging information. There is something definitely down below. Based on all the research I've done, reports from the Soviet Navy, observations by Russian sailors, and that's what I limit myself to. You know, that's my area of research. It's incredible. The objects they see moving at incredible speeds down below. Objects that come out and into the ocean. For example, I always bring up information of Vice Admiral Matushkin, who died a few years ago. Before his death, he was not hesitant to speak out. Greenland, which is very much now in the news because a number of countries want to control it now. Greenland, for half an hour, he and his crew observed movement of a gigantic object at 600 kilometers per hour, speed like that, down below in the waters not far from Greenland. Obviously, he wasn't there on an invitation mission. It was a Soviet submarine that he was aboard on. But also of the area of Novaya Zemlya in Russia, where they do atomic testing and UFOs always come when they do. They observed a UFO in that area as well, coming in and out, and coming in from the ice, you know, just going upward. And he reported it to the Academy of Sciences, which was unusual, but he did, because he was flabbergasted. What's going on? And this is a guy who led expeditions on the three oceans and many secret missions. Look, in my research, I bring other information. Easter Island. And in 1966, I believe, there was an expedition, a Soviet expedition, to to go around the world, you know, and they encountered a very large object down in the waters next to the Easter Island. And they almost banged into it, but they didn't. So that's interesting. Other cases.
You also have referenced, I think you told me in an email, about China not only being interested in the Mariana Trench, but China having an interest in the South Pole area as well. What are they doing down there?
Yeah, you know, just like a few days ago, China, I believe they're making an agreement with Chile to use the Chilean ports to be able to get into the Antarctic. They want to expand themselves in the Antarctic areas. And they have a station, Kunlun station there, but they want more. So they're using, talking to Chile over the use of a port in that country to transport personnel and materials for exploration programs in Antarctica. What programs? Peaceful, of course, the excuse, they always say it's to look at the weather change and climate change and so forth. That's, of course, not so. They're doing something else. China doesn't have any territorial claims to Antarctica. But you know what? Since 2013, it started boosting its presence in Antarctica. They definitely know something else that's going on there. They want to, actually, they were saying last year that they want to build its first permanent airfield in Antarctica. That's, you know, it's very much interested, like India, but maybe for different reasons.
Well, China's, you know, expanding its influence all over the place, in Africa, all over the planet. They spend a lot of money.
All over. A lot of it has to do with naval presence, and they're building a satellite that's capable of detecting submarines and taking them out at the depth of 500 meters. Somehow, I don't think it's only the enemy submarines they want to take out. I think they want to be able to observe everything down below, and they're doing it. They're you know, incredible technology they're working on, and they're giving funds. And I know that, for example, for one project, they have 20 institutes just working on one project related to the naval expansion, naval research in peaceful. So say peaceful means for peaceful purposes, but you know, yeah, they're doing a lot.
Well, I think we should be glad someone's doing that work in pure science and research. I mean, it seems like the money that goes into research here has to have some kind of a military application, and nobody wants to fund it.
You know, who knows what they're doing and the Russians, but they're doing something, and I hope the United States is too. But, you know, coming back to my point, I think a lot of it with Russia, is done in conjunction. I think China is doing its own research, like on the moon, like, you know, the far side of the moon, you know, and the discoveries they make. Like just not long ago, they discovered this gel-like substance on the other side of the dark side of the moon. It's been only 2 months, not even that. We still don't know what they discovered. What was it? At the end of July, a material, this is they call it Yatta 2, a rover, a lunar rover that they're using. it found a very unusual colored material in a crater, and they don't know what it is. So they kept examining it with visible and near-infrared spectrometer and detected light that scattered. We just don't know what they did. It's a makeup. But China is doing it on its own. You know, they're not involved in the International Space Station. They're building their own, and they said they will invite foreign representatives. We'll see.
Yeah, there are some U.S. contractors. Robert Bigelow, for example, here in Las Vegas, we've had his on this program talking about the Chinese space program and the idea that when or if we get back to the moon, assuming we're going to do that soon, the Chinese are likely to be there waiting for us.
Yeah, and you know what? We still don't even know the extent of the Soviet research of the moon. I got to tell you that Stalin was very much interested. Back in 1945, he talked at the Potsdam conference. He said, you know, we want to talk about the, you know, distribution of territories on the moon. And he, you know, the Allies looked at him. What are you talking about? But Stalin, there are rumors in the Soviet Union and now Russia, which are very hard to substantiate. But we tried about secretive Soviet preparation for the moon missions. I'm talking well before Korolev, and the war stopped them. But something was taking place, and there is a joke among the Soviet counterintelligence, the GRU people who are monitoring space, that when the Americans will come to the moon, they'll find Soviet-type cigarettes on its surface.
You mentioned about Phobos, and of course, I remember reading and even doing some reporting about the Russian probes that went to Phobos, and the ending for the last one was pretty abrupt and mysterious.
First of all, it wasn't Russian. It was
American. Okay.
Soviet, European, and Americans were on it every second. The JPL was getting information, I think, in real life mode, like they say now. Anyway, the last probe was spinned out from the orbit, but before it was spinned out, allegedly destroyed, and I'll get to it, it took a picture of a gigantic cigar-shaped object, I think 25 kilometers long. Marina Popovich, 28 years ago, she was in Los Angeles, she gave me one photograph, and she was not afraid to speak about it. She came here to raise noise, saying, listen, why are we in such a rush to get to Mars and Phobos when there is something waiting for us there, which doesn't like our presence? Because this mission, the Soviet probe was supposed to take laser shots at the surface of Phobos moonlet. And Burdakov, Valery Burdakov, was also raising hell in the Soviet Union. It was still that country at the time, saying, what's going on? Why are we going there? Those who exist on that moon moonlet don't want us there. So that was very interesting. Now, look what's going on now. The Soviets and the Chinese, the Russians and the Chinese tried to get back.
I'll tell you what, hold on, Paul. Hold on a second. The music tells us we need to go into a break. We got a lot of ground still to cover, and we'll be opening up the phone lines with your questions for my guest, Paul Stonehill. I mentioned earlier at the top of the hour, welcome to autumn, because autumn starts on this date, but it does not start right at midnight. One of our listeners, Glenn Walsh, works at the planetarium and wrote to me to say, the official start of autumn is at 12:50 a.m. Pacific time, so that's 15 minutes from now. So enjoy the last 15 minutes of your summer, and Glenn, thanks for calling in. We're going to go to the phones here in the upcoming segments. Still have a lot of ground to cover with my guest, Paul Stonehill, on Coast to Coast AM, including Tunguska. We'll be right back. Paul, before the break, we'd been talking about Russian space exploits and programs, and the suggestion is made that maybe Stalin launched some sort of a space program, some sort of an effort to get to the moon much earlier than the Americans did. I wonder why he would not, or the Russians or the USSR would not later take credit for something like that. The propaganda victory would be enormous.
They would have. And unless it was of a much more secretive nature, that it had to be hidden, and it just doesn't sound probable and credible enough. But he was trying. He actually created two ministries of aviation before World War II. And you know where Chernobyl is today? Well, at that site, they were building some interesting facilities allegedly for the moon program, but Nazis stopped it, and you know, it was abandoned. So just same location. The Soviet history of Soviet space exploration is also, it also has its secrets, infighting and so forth. What is interesting is that, of course, they acquired a lot of technology from Nazi Germany after World War II, but those who were at the helm of the Soviet space exploration, like Sergei Korolev, were very much interested in, you could call paranormal, or gave protection to people like Valery Burdakov. Actually, it was Korolev that gave his own money to fund an expedition to the Tunguska in 1958. People wanted to find out what was going on, young scientists and future cosmonauts like Grechka. And, you know, because Korolev knew there was something that was going on. He wasn't the only one interested in the area. I know you want to get into this also in the Tunguska event. I just want to add that it was very interesting that about the same time that maybe Stalin was interested in acquiring nuclear bomb and other things and UFOs, it was Beria, the chief of the KGB at the time, who authorized a special expedition to go to the Tunguska area, staffed by top military scientists, and to study local information and find out whether an alien spaceship actually exploded over the Taiga in 1908. He based his ideas, as far as I know, on information from Alexander Kazantsev, a Soviet writer and also a director of military plant, who was a visitor to the United States in 1939 at the New York exhibit. I forgot what it was called. And he was banning the Soviet portion of the exhibit. And he never suffered for that. Nobody put him in concentration camps like they did others. He was the one that professed the idea that it was an alien spaceship that exploded, like, and the nuclear energy was released. Well, they wanted to find out, was it so or not? Do you think we even know what happened to the results of that expedition? It's locked up. There is no more Soviet Union. This information is still out of bounds.
Huh. Has there been more recent? It seems like I read something about a more recent expedition to Tunguska.
Oh, there have been quite a lot. And as far as, if I'm not mistaken, A.J. Guevard is trying to get there too from Brazil. It's open today. Unlike before, if you can withstand the conditions and mosquitoes, yeah, you can get there. The thing is, if there's anything left, I am more interested in the expeditions that took place before. There was one, and that's incredible, almost like a year after the Tunguska event took place. Nobody knows who those people were. They had equipment. They were well-staffed. They came to the site. They were collecting something and left. We don't know who they were. Who did they represent? Because officially, it wasn't known in the Soviet Union about the Tunguska until 1947. Not really, not until Kulik went there. In 1911, there was a very interesting expedition from local Siberian area to study what happened to the roads and so forth. But there was another one, which is the most incredible, and I mentioned it in my video. There was a scientific expedition who was working at the site right when the event took place. I don't want to say explosion. I could say implosion. I could say intercept. But whatever happened at that time was not registered by scientists who actually work down below. And the reports that they presented dated June of 1908 don't have any mention of the Tunguska. How could it be? Well, I try to explain it based on you know, ideas of Russian and Ukrainian scientists. We still don't know what happened. I like the idea it was an intercept, and I link it with Yakutia and the so-called cauldrons area and so forth. We don't even know how many bodies were in the air because different eyewitnesses say different things, but apparently there are reports that two bodies were in the sky and they kind of banged into each other, and there was the explosion. We do know the impact was incredible, humongous, on Russia and the world itself.
And no pieces found, right? No pieces that anybody's ever confirmed came from there? No.
Yevbin, there was a scientist called Yevbin about 15 years ago. He kept saying they found something. Okay, if you find something, present it. But nothing was found.
Let's take some calls. First-time caller Dustin in Mount Vernon, Washington. Hi, Dustin. You're on with Paul Stonehill.
Hello?
Hello. How you doing? What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing tonight? I have a question for your guest this evening. I was wondering if you heard of an expedition, I'm not sure what year it was, involved a team of Russian divers diving a hole into Lake Vostok and encountered a form of an octopus. They referred to the project or the creature as Organism 46B. And it was said to have the capability to camouflage and even change forms, even mimicking one of the divers, killing four of the five team. And it was pretty a fantastic story. And it was also said that it had a poisonous ink that it shot out, and that they were going to harvest that and use it as a biological weapon of sorts or something. I just was wondering if you had heard of this, if there was any truth to it. I think I came across it on the internet. So,
well, thanks, Dustin. Let's find out. Paul, it sounds sort of like a story from Lake Baikal.
Yeah, I think they mixed up Lake Baikal, but I heard about the humongous octopus. I think somebody from Russia was pushing this story in London and made a lot of noise. But, you know, first of all, divers cannot get into Lake Vostok. Secondly, nothing reported by anybody about octopuses down below. There are octopus, very interesting creatures in other lakes. 1982, Lake Baikal, yes. Soviet frogmen were trying to capture gigantic beings, humanoid beings who were operating down below doing their business, no breeding apparatus. Soviets started to capture them, and they lost a number of frogmen who were just thrown out from the bottom of the lake. Very interesting description of these giants, a tall, 9 feet, silvery uniform, silvery dress, like they were wearing. However, similar reports from 1982, similar creature was reported in the Sietka, official Soviet UFO research program, was registered. Similar being. I also followed up, and in the later years, I found out Russian naval counterintelligence were hunting down in the Far East similar creature, and there are more reports. The last piece of report I found out that 1932, White Sea, Soviet Union, in the north, similar creatures reportedly saved the life of a Soviet scientist who was drowning, and he was taken to a base in that area, and he existed with them for a while, and they brought him back. Very interesting, but it doesn't sound as fantastic as the way I say it, because he was very detailed in his report, and what struck me was the way that the creatures looked. So you get it. This is what you have.
Dustin, thanks for that call. We're going to go to the wildcard line. Doc in Petaluma wants to discuss Lake Vostok as well. Hi, Doc.
Hi there. Let me get you off speaker here.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What's on your mind? What's on your mind? You called us. What's on your mind? I think he's gone. We're going to go to Paul in Boston. Hey, Paul. Good morning.
Program tonight, the presentation. Great job. As far as the, I got two comments. As far as that group that, of scientists that were killed up on the Russian mountains. There's a possibility that, and I've heard it on several programs, that a Russian aircraft, which is capable of going three times the speed of sound, like the Russian backfire bomber, the ground pressure on that, if it's flying contour, which is perhaps 100 feet off the deck. The overpressure from that can be devastating. I've seen the effects of the B-1B, our bomber, at 600 miles an hour at 150 feet off the deck. And if it goes over virgin territory, the trees would just like snap like toothpicks. So that's a possibility of one, because the human body just can't stand up to that type of overpressure, and velocity of the air rushing back in behind it. The other thing is, Admiral Byrd had quite a consultation. I think it was in 46 or 47 when he took the fleet down to Antarctica. You want to comment on that?
If the Soviets had such an airplane, they could have used it a few times in local wars, but they didn't. Israel beat the hell out of them in 1970 in Egypt, and they suffered a few other losses, so I don't think they had an aircraft like that. They would have used it, if not against the U.S., against its allies. As far as Admiral Byrd, yeah, it's a whole excellent story, and you can read up about it. All I can tell you is that the Soviets knew he was there, and apparently they had their own forces on site at the time, and I think they shook each other's hands. What happened after that, I don't know, but the relationship had been very cordial between the Americans and the Soviets in Antarctica.
Oh. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate those comments and questions. We're going to go to Mike in Colorado. Hey, Mike.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you so much for taking my call. First of all, before I get to my question for your guest, George, I just wanted to really compliment you for the job you did on the Area 51 raid segment. The way you broke the story with Maddie Roberts, I think it needs to be commended, and I really appreciate the work you did on that. So,
thank you. What's on your mind for Paul?
My question for Paul is, in his bio, I was reading about how he had done a lot of research on ancient Antarctica and how some of the ancient civilizations could have been located there, and what could have took place in ancient Antarctica and what could still be there today under the ice. So I wanted to get his opinion on that, and I want to thank you for taking my call, gentlemen.
Thank you. Ancient civilizations, so paleocontact and so forth, it's not only the Antarctica where they had existed. I think we have more information about the Arctic areas, like Hyperborea hypothesis and so forth. But from my research, I found I depend on observations of military people, like from Russia or the Soviet Union before. And, for example, I found out about island of Rashua in the Kuril Islet chain, and just by a chance, Soviet divers, naval personnel, found out about structures down below that look like ancient ruins of ancient cities. So that's one case. Or in the Atlantic, for example, in 1981, the Soviets actually saw something that looked like ruins of ancient cities. And there was a lot of noise about it, but it died down, and nobody ever came back to investigate more. But it's there, and some people thought it's the Atlantic, it's the Atlantis down below. So I'll give you more interesting information. According to Pavel Popovich, former Soviet cosmonaut, also from Ukraine, who was very much helping ufologists and researchers, he revealed in the interview not long before he died that there are underwater bases created by aliens. Let's put it that way. One of them exists in the Indian Ocean, as an example. And he mentioned a few other areas. That's very interesting when people of that standing talk about underwater civilizations and presence.
I appreciate the call. What do you think about that? I mean, how credible is his claim? He's a credible person, clearly, with a background as a cosmonaut. But did he ever reveal where he got that information?
When he was asked, he had military oath to adhere to. And the question is, if there is no more Soviet Union, you live in Russia, you are Ukrainian, Who do you give the oath to? But he was reluctant, and you know what? A number of old cosmonauts were the same. However, Popovich was very outspoken. And he actually did something to push the research along. He was the one that got the 124 pages from KGB, those files.
Oh.
So, you know, he was not a stupid guy. He was an intelligent person. Americans knew quite a lot about him. I think his nickname was the Aggressor, because he was involved in the Soviet military space program.
I remember that. Marina Popovich and Pavel, when they both came forward with bits and pieces of information at considerable personal risk, I think, at the time.
I think so. Marina was very much... I'm sorry she died not long ago. I really wanted her to go back to the United States and speak, but she couldn't. She was very outspoken. Pavel Popovich, a few other cosmonauts as well, and even Grechko came around to admit that, you know, there are, let's say, UFOs or aliens. Ukrainian Kadenyuk, others, they all spoke about it. No, not all. Some of them spoke about it. Let's put it that way.
You know, those people of that age bracket, like Americans of that age bracket, they took an oath. They promise not to tell this stuff, and they stick to their word even long after there's, you know, a reason to keep it secret.
Yes. Yes.
We're talking with...
Some of them do speak out before, like Vice Admiral Matushkin, and that's why we know. And others, cosmonaut Igor Volk, who died not long ago, he was the one, the only one that flew the Buran shuttle. Anyway, he observed UFOs on Earth with an official from the Soviet space program together. And
we're talking with... We're talking about Paul Stonehill, Russian secrets, Chinese secrets, mysteries, a lot of folks on the phones. We'll be back with more of your calls and questions and comments in a few moments.